My name is Rick Cheddar, and this is From Radioland. So you want to get into broadcasting, and you went to a school, a broadcasting school, and now you can't get in the business. this sort of thing happens a lot, apparently, and well, as a matter of fact, I get a lot of emails regarding such a thing for people who want to come and work at Radio Memphis. And as flattered as I am that people want to come and waste their time with us, that's all well and good. I waste their time. People think, I guess, sometimes that the radio industry is the shortcut to some sort of stardom. And that isn't the case. There is no such thing as real stardom anymore. You remember, video killed the radio star, according to the Buggles. But, you know, going to a school and, you know, having some type of accreditation to justify your way into a studio, and here you are, you want to be in broadcasting. And by God, you went to school for it, and they taught you all this stuff, and there you have it. And as it turns out, the first things, you know, when I was in college, and I did study I studied journalism. It was a totally different thing, obviously. You know, School of Journalism, yeah, you need to have that. If you're going to go be a journalist, you should at least have some sense of ability to write, some bit of sense on knowing what makes good television copy or radio copy. That's one thing. But to sit there and learn how to speak and the diction classes and all of that, that's just horse hockey right there. It's one of those things. You either have it or you don't. And I'm not saying that I have it. It's, for me, being in the radio business was something that it finds you. You know, the business finds you, per se. Not too many people I know have just, you know, wake up one day and go, you know what, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. I knew I was going to be in some type of electronic media, but, you know, radio, of course, was my first love. I did spend a time in television and got back into radio, and of course now with everybody, all the changes that have occurred in the industry, I'm happy now. And having all that education, when you go to the colleges, you go to the schools, wherever it is that you go, and you're lucky enough to get hired on by a broadcaster, a radio station, or a television station, the first thing that is often said to them is, forget everything you learned in school, because that doesn't apply here. And that's so true. It is. Oh, it's so true, because schools are out of touch. They're teach. You know, there's an adage in this business that those who can do, those who don't teach, or those who can't teach. And if that is actually true, which it seems to be, the people that are teaching these classes are the ones that are disgruntled people that have been blown out of the business from one shape or reason or another and have now found themselves teaching on a campus of some sort at a quote-unquote school of broadcasting or in a university setting where they're trying to shape these young minds into what is a proper form of broadcasting. That's not the case. No, it's hard to explain. It's nearly impossible to teach. You know, there's techniques and things like that, of course, that I've been able to impart on those. But I found here at Radio Memphis that, and this sounds really kind of strange too, at least for me, the people that have come onto the air here with us are, there's two types. There's those who have done it and those who have not. And those who have, all we have to do is, you know, hey, we need to do this, don't do that, and you're good to go. You know how to run everything else. Those who have not been around a hot mic but have shown some modicum of ability to do it are actually the best people in the world to be in this business. And that's where the business finds them. We have prime examples of that running rampant through Radio Memphis right now. And it's very good. It really is. And we found that those who have really felt that the microphone was going to be their path to ultimate, I guess, stardom or fortune and glory or whatever you want to call it, they are the ones who have found the door before they found any of that. It just happens that way. And, you know, it's neither here nor there. But in the past, with this podcast, we did the history thing, and that gave you a good idea of what kind of attracted me to the business, what is fascinating about it. And it is, to me, a very fascinating thing. So if you haven't heard it, look for the, I don't have the number, but it was just a few episodes back regarding the history of broadcast, selected cuts, I believe was what was the episode entitled. And it was a really interesting time to sit here and play back a lot of that audio when I was putting that podcast together, because it rekindles that. And there's a moment too when I sit here in the studio in the control room, and when there's nobody around and I've got the actual radio station turned down and I'm working on a bit of audio, trying to get something kind of put together, and there's that little hint of the magic that still exists for me in this business. And it's that, you know, this is going to sound really good when it's played back, or this is a really cool thing that I've got working on right now. And I like that feeling that it's almost taking me back in time a little bit to really some of the more glory days of the industry. And for those of you that are listening to this podcast that are in the business right now, first of all, my condolences to the death of terrestrial radio. I know that sounds glib. Coming from somebody who was once in it, blown out of it, there was a lot of radio people, good radio people that were put out on the beach, as it were, and it was tough, and a lot of us that were put out like that have a kind of a sour taste in our mouth as a result of it, and you know, rightfully so. I do believe that to be the case, and I'll tell you why. You see the industry run by idiots. And they make completely asinine statements in the business. And they do completely ridiculous things to justify their position in management in this business. I have worked under general managers that had no idea how the business... My last general manager, his name is Michael Oppenheimer. He has since been fired as well. He's now on the beach. After I was blown out, Michael actually admitted to us that he had never watched a sitcom on television. That's a pretty ballsy thing to admit to somebody. I mean, how can you go through your entire life, unless you are some uncontacted tribe in the jungles of Brazil, that don't understand the concept of a television, much less, how can you go through your life and not witness an episode of a sitcom? And through the years, there have been absolute genius shows out there, and there's some that are happening now. There's some great stuff that's out there. And when he said that to me, I'm sitting there thinking, well, that explains your lack of sense of humor. Because he never really seemed to get all of the jokes that we were doing in the morning show when John and I were doing it, and he was a numbers guy, and that's all he was into was not ratings, but math. I mean, the money. That was the math that he was interested in. It was, you know, how many nickels we can roll up onto the desk and put in our pocket. That's what he thought, and there's, you know, that's what his line of work was in. That's what his expertise. But when it came to content, and you know, you had guys like him and others that would come back there and try and put their fingerprint on what it was that they were running and what they were managing, and they like, well, I don't like this bit or I don't like that bit, and you know, don't say this and don't say that, and you just look at them and say, what the hell are you talking about? And that has happened so much, I guess, in the business that's where corporate had decided that it would be best to bring in this horrible group of people called consultants. Those of you that have been in the business understand what a consultant is. Those of you outside of the business may have a little bit of a grip on it, but I will tell you this, to explain it, to put it in some type of context for you. A consultant, of course, is an expert, and I use that term in the air quotes, an expert that comes in and they tell you how to do your job. They are often paid and hired to tell the corporation everything they already want to know, so they can justify their own decisions, you know, their own bad decisions, by paying somebody to say, well, yes, they should do this, or yes, they shouldn't do this. And if that's the case, then, you know, it certainly seems to be that way a lot. I actually, when I was in television, and this actually happened also in radio, the consultant that was brought in television, It was this this young lady, fairly attractive lady. And she sat down with me and the news director, who was my boss at the time. I was an anchor. I was the 6 and 10 p.m. anchor at this station in Kansas. And I'm sitting there at this table. And they've got some footage, you know, some tape of a couple of newscasts that I had done. And they were looking at it. And she's making all of these benign comments about the color of my tie, the pattern on my jacket, the way, how many times I blink during a story. Yeah, this is true. I nearly lost my job over a coat one time. It was sad. But that's just how thin these people really think. And one of the bits of tape that she wanted to critique me on was a moment of spontaneous live television that had occurred where some breaking news was going on, and I was trying to get through the technical end of it and trying to present this to the public as best as I possibly could at the time. And I thought I did an okay job with it, and I didn't really hear any complaints. But this bitch, she sits there and she tells me that I should have done this, this, and this, and, you know, I should have looked this way, I should have cocked my head a certain way. And I just held my hands up. I said, look, hey, let me ask you something. You're sitting here telling me all of these wonderful things, but I've got to know something. How did you handle a similar situation in all the years of experience that you speak from? And she looked down at her hands and at her notes. And she pulled her glasses off of her face and she looked at me and she said, I've never been on television. And I said, my apologies. I turned to the news director and I said, this meeting's over. She has zero credibility with me. You're telling me how to be credible to an audience where you don't even know how this is done. So I walked out of the meeting. I got fussed at over it. Yeah, sure. You know, but I proved my point. How can you sit there and say you have to do what this person says, even though they don't have any experience doing it? Makes no sense to me. I don't know. The same thing has happened in when I was at Clear Channel. I sat in a consultants meeting once about the morning show with Bad Dog, and this hump was sitting. I don't even remember this guy's name. If I knew it, I'd tell you. But this guy sat there. He's probably one of the other people that had been fired. He sat there and wanted to know what our particular roles were on the air. And both John and I looked at each other and said, what kind of bullshit question is that? We crack a mic, we talk, we have some fun, we tell some off-color jokes, we get a little tacky, a little ribald, we play some rock and roll, we move along to the next element. There's no real role. Now, we got to establish a role for you. I said, well, okay. If you want to break it down like that, okay, John's the funny guy. I'm the straight guy. Well, that's not really good enough. We need to establish more roles. We need to have more of a character development. It's a radio show during morning drive. We've already been told we can't talk as much because we're not playing enough records. So it didn't really matter to me. Well, there was some, you know. We went through some of the bits that we were doing at the time, and he's sitting there going, well, that seems, you know, that seems like that's, you know, good comedy content there, and we thought should really work fairly well. And I looked over at Spencer at that time, Tim Spencer, and I said, dude, this is ridiculous. This is, you know. But once again, they had to come in. They had to tell us what we were doing wrong, what they wanted us to do, and if we didn't do any of that, that was the grounds for that they wanted us to be terminated by. And when that happened, when they canceled the Bad Dog and Rick show and fired me over the whole thing, they did it by saying that the numbers were low, that nobody was listening, and they would never show us those numbers, of course. But as it turned out, our numbers were quite sufficient. Number one, in the target demographic that we had been hired to achieve, which is the male 25 to 54 audience, we thought we'd captured it fairly well, as a matter of fact. And we were not disappointed. We didn't think that they would be disappointed either, but apparently they were. And that's the amusing part about it, because it was after I got out or after I was out, I had friends who did have access to those numbers send them to me, and it, of course, told a completely different story. I mean, the whole real reason why they were firing people was to eliminate paychecks. They were eliminating salaried positions as best as they possibly could because it's tough to run a business in the red every year or every quarter or every month. But, you know, that's the thing. And that's where people get a little upset when their favorite personalities or their favorite shows have been canceled because they don't understand why they got rid of them. They didn't get rid of them because of numbers. They got rid of them because of the money numbers. That's the numbers that really did them in. And they weren't seeing enough profit for themselves. These companies, they become top heavy, as you know. It's just the way it goes in this country, in the United States, is that if you are, you know, a big time company and you sit up in the ivory tower and you're the big boss of everybody and you are making a ass load of money, but all the people that are doing all the work for you are making pennies, you still got to find a way to cut the budget. So you cut it from the guys that are working their ass off to keep you in, you know, crack and hookers. Nevertheless, they did that. They blow you out, and then they wonder why they can't cut. You know, they can't cut any more out, and why the product suffers, and this, that, and the other. But yet, the vice presidents of this department and that department, and the executive VP and the president of this, they're all making more money than they know what to do with in five lifetimes.
We can't understand where all this money is.
Check your pockets. That's where it's at. So when I built Radio Memphis, the first idea that came to my mind was to not be so fucking greedy. There's no need for that. You spread it around as best as you can, and you run the industry as best as you possibly can. And while you're doing that, you attempt to entertain as many people as you possibly can. This podcast is a prime example of it. Substantial numbers of folks have subscribed to it. And my thanks, my deepest thanks to all of you for continuing to be a part of it. Not much of an intro on this. Obviously, I'm sitting here, 15 minutes into it, and I neglected to tell you that I'm doing this by myself tonight, or today, or whenever it is that you're listening. So, yeah. Whatever. We got some good stuff coming, though, I can tell you that. So, at any rate, the industry, what was I getting? The idea that the emails that I get on a routine basis are from people who like to tell me that that they went to such and such school of broadcasting and they now feel perfectly qualified to come be a part of our little humble operation in radio. Yeah, not so much. You know, I love the ass kissing that comes in the email.
Man, I really love what you're doing over there, man, and I appreciate it, man. I just want to be there, and I just want to go. I've got to be on the air because that's what I do, man.
But they don't send you a demo. Some guy who had emailed me, I guess, a couple of weeks back. Claimed to have been in the business some 20 years, wants me to hire him, doesn't include a resume, doesn't include the standard demo reel, because, you know, you can look at someone's resume and go, well, look, this person does have some experience, it looks that way, you know, that's written down, you know, that can be fiction for all I know, and for a lot of times, it usually is. But if you can't come up off of I gotta hear your voice, man. Not that I'm hiring, because I'm not. So don't let this be an open invitation for you to start sending your stuff in. I'm not hiring. Sorry, can't help you there. At least not at the moment. And trust me, I'm going to be pretty picky about that kind of thing. And there's a lot of people that are far more deserving than others when it comes to being here in the radio station. And you know, people, I guess, they just feel that they've been told by family members that they have a good voice. Well, my mama said I had a good voice. Well, you probably do, but do you know how to use it? Do you know how to speak with some modicum of, that's twice I've used that word in this podcast, modicum. Can you speak? I can't even speak. Can you speak with some form of entertainment or inflection without mispronouncing every word that comes across your face. That's a hard part. It's a hard thing to do. What are you going to do when you're live on the air and something happens that is out of your control? How do you handle that? That's all part of it. That's where experience comes in. You want to present something to the best and the best light that you can. Now, if you're comedy based, which we sort of are, comedy and information. Who is the sacred cow? Who is it that you're not supposed to make fun of? Because that's the one you do. And when you do, first rule of business is you make fun of yourself along with it. That way, nobody gets offended. But that's the theory, at least. There's so many people out there that are looking to be offended by one certain thing or another. And Lord knows, I have my fair share of offending people. I have been referred to as every name in the book, which is fine. I'm okay with that. That comes with the territory. A lot of that is jealousy, you know, and which I find really strange. How could you be jealous of what I do? What I do is I spend most of my time worrying about how the bills are going to get paid. For God's sake, this is not about massive fortunes. Trust me, folks, I'm not doing this for the money. If a couple of bucks winds up coming in the door, yeah, it's already spent. Those of us around the radio station, those of us here that do assist in the podcast here, are in it for the pure love of doing it, because it is fun. It's enjoyable. There is a certain bit of joy that does come from it. But you've got to keep in mind too that show business is not all about sitting in front of this microphone or looking into a camera. There's a lot of work that goes into it, and there's a lot of behind the scenes stuff that goes on. You know, a circus, for example, when it comes to town, it's not about the 2-hour performance every evening, twice on Sundays for the matinee. It's not about that. It's about how they set up the rings. It's about how they prep the gear. It's about, how they get all the costumes ready. It's about how the clowns look in their makeup. It's about how many tickets they sell for the show. It's about keeping the show going when there's all of these other things that are happening. That's show business. That's what it's all about. And, that's the business that we're in, and you have to attempt to keep that under its right perspective. It isn't just about sitting here and running your mouth, which I can tell you right now, I'm not going to be doing it as long as I normally would. At least I would think that. I mean, I came into this one just sort of kind of unprepared. It was sort of a last minute thing. As I actually had someone scheduled in for this particular recording session, but through circumstances beyond our control, it didn't happen that way, which is why I'm just going to sit here and talk with you. And I'm just freeform and talking off the top of my head here, and there's nobody else around. So there's that. But I wanted to give you a little bit of an insight of what I deal with when I do hear from people outside that feel that they have what it takes to come into this and to do this. There was an individual who had sent me an email about a particular type of show that we should be running here at Radio Memphis, and I wrote back to the guy. I said, because he was offering me one that he produces, and it was pre-taped, and it was had all these other elements and stuff in it. And I wrote back to the guy and I said, oh, man, I've already got one of those shows. I appreciate it, that particular style of show. And I said, thank you for your interest. Thank you for your submission. Take it light. Best of luck. Adios. Take it light. And this guy had the balls to write back to me and say, well, how narrow-minded are you to have only one of that type of show? You should have more than that. And at that point, I really felt like I needed to get into an argument with this jackass. So how dare you tell me how to run my business? you stupid son of a bitch. So actually, I wrote the guy back, this time a little more direct. And I said, first of all, dickless, I don't run pre-recorded programming. What you hear on Radio Memphis is live. God got one in the genre that you speak of. And you're not able to come in here and do this live. And if you did, you would stick in your hand out like the rest of America wanting a piece of it. No means no. Never heard back from the guy. I figured I made my point. Right or wrong. I mean, that's... I had to say it that way. Because it was like, you know, the guy was offering me a program that I already had. Mine was live. His is not. And when I turned him down, he got pissy with me. I mean, I'm flattered that this guy really wants to be on this radio station, but for God's sake, man, insulting the guy that you're applying the job to is really not going to do you that many favors. Maybe that's just me. I don't know. The Blues Show that we run on Sunday nights, 8 p.m. Central Time to 11 p.m., Jeff Janowitz and I. Jeff is a frequent contributor to this podcast. I'd gotten an email from a guy, and I can't remember where he was. It was some time ago. But he does a Blues Show as well, and he was really trying to sell me that I should run his show over my own. And, you know, it was a doable type of thing. There was nothing really wrong with it. The guy had some legs. The show had some legs. It was on a lot of other markets. And I wrote back to the guy and I said, look, man, I already do one myself and it's live. Appreciate you submissions and all that. And the guy writes back and he says, hey, no problem. If you ever have a change of heart and you're, you know, looking for something like this, feel free to reach out to me and we'll see what we can make. And that's how you handle that. That's professionalism. I'd almost hire him on the spot to do something for us if he didn't mind working for nothing and was okay with that. Far too often, people think that there's a lot to be had here. It's not. It's us giving everything that we have away. And that's the hard part about it. We find ourselves in positions where we have content and we give it away. We create it and give it away. We try to find a way to sponsor it because that's how we would make the money on it. And people don't mind commercials. I know they get, hell, I get a little annoyed by them myself. I'm running commercials that kind of annoy me. Some of them are. The ones that pay really well, they don't bother me at all. And that, yes, go ahead, call me a sellout. I'm a whore. Fine, that's what I do. But people, by and large, don't mind a little bit of advertising. They can stomach that. That's what it's for. They understand that. Besides, there might be something in that advertisement that just might appeal to you. It's one of the things that we do around the radio station is we try and put a closer finger on what the pulse of our audience is, who they are. Because I'm not going to waste my listeners' time if I have a kind of a little bit of an idea of who they are, what age they are, what they do for a living, perhaps. And I'm not going to waste their time by putting advertisement products or products being advertised in front of them that mean absolutely nothing to them, because then they'll just turn off the thing and go away. It's like, you know, speaking of advertisement, I'm jumping around a little bit, but maybe y'all might agree with this, but when you're listening to radio and you hear a car dealer come on, well, first, I love how it's almost a pattern with them that it's like the car dealer commercials that run on radio and on, I guess, on television, too. And I'm talking dealerships now. I'm not talking like, you know, Ford or Chevy or whomever. I'm talking about, you know, Joe Blow's car dealer shop down on wherever they're at. Those commercials, they don't just have a brightness to them that grab your attention, and they come out and they don't give you a good warm and fuzzy feeling, if you know what I'm saying. Because what I'm getting at here is that they feel like they just ooze off of your radio. Much the same way when you go to a car dealer and you're out on the lot and these buzzards come around you trying to like push you into some deal. They're about ready to pencil whip you into oblivion over a car note. and they just oozing around the place, and they're just this, hey, it's good. I feel like I need a bath after I've dealt with them. I produced a bunch of these commercials in my career, a bunch of these car dealership commercials, and I was a voice of a couple of different dealerships throughout the time, and those were fine. I mean, I got a couple of bucks for them, but by God, it was absolutely remarkable to me how one in particular, one of the guys that was doing them that I had produced, he insisted on cutting his own commercials, which is fine. I mean, you have that. It's your money. Do what you want with it. But it was all about yelling at the audience. And when you'd hear it on, you know, you're driving around and you're hearing it in your car, you just want to go, quit yelling at me. Stop shouting. I get it. You're selling a car. I'm not buying it. This is not me. But, you know, obviously they do enough business to stay in business. So, I mean, obviously advertisement does work. And, you know, there are those that actually sit there and go, oh, you know, I like the fact that this man is berating me. He is insulting me because I drive a piece of shit and I need to go down to his place because he's got the best deal in town on a car I don't need that I can pay more than what I need to and bring it home. And after 5 minutes, it won't be worth the paper the contract was written on. But that, my friend, is the secret of advertisement right there, isn't it? That's how it works. That's a good thing. I'm telling you that, it reminded me of a time when I was doing a series of commercials for a dealership. It doesn't exist anymore, but their cars are still out there, so I'm not going to mention it because I don't want to really upset anybody with it. But this is a fairly amusing story. The agency, the advertisement agency that had contracted me to do their spots, would send over their script. They'd fax it. This was before email. They would fax it to us, and I would go into the studio. Now, of course, this is before serious digital. I mean, there was some digital work, but it wasn't, you know, we were still putting stuff on cassette to send back out, which was really strange. But anyway, the spot would come in, and I would, you know, it would have the copy, you know, the words. And then we had the music bed, or what they called a donut, which is had the opening jingle and a closing jingle, and there was enough instrumental in the middle for you to fit the copy in, and boom, you had your commercial. And I would do the commercial, and they would want me to call the agent. The agency would want me to call them, and we had this deal where I could play tapes over the phone, so they could hear it. And because they were paying to have it done, they never liked the first three takes. They always had you redo some of it. Put this emphasis on that word. Put a bigger pause here. And they're telling you how to do your job. And so, you know, I knew this going in. So I would do three takes of the spot, and I'd have them all ready to go, but I would only play them once per phone call. So I would call up the lady, and she'd go, okay, let's hear the commercial, and you play it. And she goes, I don't like this, do that, you know, making all these changes. I said, all right. So I would go, I'd step outside, have a smoke, go to the bathroom, get a soda. About 20 minutes later, I'd call her up. I said, look, here's the second spot, and I'd already have the tape there, and I'd play it. And she'd bitch, whine, and moan about that. No problem at all. 15 minutes later, I would come back, and instead of playing the third spot, I played the first one again. And she would say, invariably, you nailed it. That's the keeper. Send that one out. Little insight on how that's done. Sometimes, yeah, there was a third spot that I would have to do, but more than often it was always the first one. They felt as though they needed to control it. They were like, if I'm spending this money, I need to be more hands on with it. Is I guess the way it feels. And there's something else about that too, is that it seems to me, and this probably applies to a lot of other businesses, not just the broadcasting business or advertisement. But I think in other aspects, in other applications of business. But it seems that the more money a client is, you know, being, you know, is spending on your business to be taken care of, the less they give a shit. And it's vice versa. If it's a very short buy, if it's like under $500, and somebody's like, "Well, man, that's $500, man. You know, how dare you get it done in one take?" Whereas the guy that's dropping $40,000-$50,000 into your business, and you know, for advertisement, and you go in there and you go into the studio and you knock it out in one take, and that goes, "Man, love it. That's why you're the pro. Thanks. Keep up the good work. I got a split. Email it to me. We'll catch you up later." I love working with people like that. I just wish everybody could be that way, but you know, beggars can't be choosers now, can they? Or can we? I'm not quite sure. Not quite sure how to lay that on there. So, any rate, I know this is going to be kind of a brief one this time out, but just a little bit of an insight of what it was like, and what it's like to hear from folks who say, "I want to get into your business because I went to the so and so school of broadcasting, and I can do what I can do, and you need to hire me because I'm a master at it." Just don't include your demo or a resume, or else I would never know, right? Here's what's coming up on the next edition from Radioland. You pay $50 to park your car. You pay another $50 to get in. The city makes all that money.
And then it's just the Sodom and Gomorrah from there.
And then just, if you're dumb enough to pay $9 for a PBR, then that's on you. If you're dumb enough to pay, you know, $100 for a hand job under the table, that's on you. Could be a calloused hand for all you know.
Ooh, I don't mean to down our music scene here in Memphis, but there's no clear...
Down away, my man.
No, there's no clear cohesive scene so that there's some front runner to emulate. You know, again, guys like me that used to be, I'll stay up till 3 in the morning, hang out at the high tone, sure, get shit-faced. But have since grown up, gotten married, had kids, moved on. They'd come out and hear live music if they didn't have to do it at 10 o'clock at night.
Radio Memphis is an internet broadcasting service provided by PirateRadioStudios.com, Memphis, Tennessee, USA.
So there you have it. I'm going to punch it out for this go-around. Once again, my thanks to all of you who have found this podcast. We're now in all sorts of places. We're of course on iTunes. That one comes out on Mondays. I uploaded the thing on a Sunday, and so iTunes doesn't really get to, you know, sink their teeth into it on Monday. I guess they have to make sure it all works and it's legit. I don't know. iTunes is kind of funny that way. But at any rate, there's, you know, because they have the little podcast app that you can get on your iPhone and all that groovy stuff. Meanwhile, you can RSS subscribe to this thing. There's ways to do that. You can find that information on my blog, which is really the home. This is a written home of this podcast, and it's found at rickchatter.blogspot.com. You can find some on-air notes about the particular show and something a little more personal about it. Sometimes there's a picture to go with it there on the blog that as well. Our thanks to Podbean, who hosts the actual podcast, rickcheddar.podbean.com. All the episodes are there as they are on the blog spot page as well. We're also on Stitcher Radio. The Stitcher app is free. Some of you may already have that. Apparently a lot of you have that app because there's a lot of podcasts I like to listen to, and I thank you for including this one into your ongoing library of podcasted entertainment. Stitcher's a really cool thing. If you're just getting hooked up into the podcast scene, Stitcher's a good place to start. Just type in a name and go with it and have some fun. We are also out there on TuneIn, which is another type of deal. But what's different about TuneIn and Stitcher, TuneIn not only has podcasts, but they also have online radio stations. You can also listen to Radio Memphis through your TuneIn app. It's there. Just search Radio Memphis and you'll find us right there on the TuneIn. And so you can find it there along with this podcast. We appreciate you doing that. And also just got word that we are now available at player.fm. I don't recall submitting the podcast to them, but apparently they picked us up, or apparently I did. But we just got picked up from them. They were so nice to mention me in a tweet on their Twitter, And they had they mentioned the podcast out to their, all of their folks. So that was really nice. Got a nice little bump out of subscribers as a result of that. But player.fm, some of you may already have that app as well. So, you know, you can find us there as well. If you want to get if you want to see what else is happening in my world outside of the podcast, you can find me at radio-memphis.com. And if that wasn't enough, there is, of course, I'm on the Facebook. I just don't really do that much with it. You know what I'm saying? Every once in a while I'll comment or I'll promote something, but really I'm more of a Twitter guy. And you can find me at Rick Cheddar, RICCHETTER is where you can find me up on the Twitter. You feel free to drop me a line and say hello there if you'd like. Most of what I do on Twitter is snarky because I can do it in less than 140 characters, and I don't have to deal with all of the likes and unlikes and the shares and the that's why I like Twitter. It's the Facebook without the Facebook. It's a good way to look at it, I suppose. So there you go. We'll be back next week. And on that note, thank you once again for being a part of this podcast. I'm Rick Cheddar, and this has been From Radioland.